Hey friends, just wanted to drop a quick note. If you are a teacher or an administrator in the school and you're looking for a tool, a resource that can help better engage your students, that can get them more all in on the classroom experience and overall elevate the classroom and school experience for the students, then you need to take advantage of our Lead 'Em Up classroom. We officially have launched our Lead 'Em Up classroom so teachers and administrators can begin utilizing the same powerful curriculum that coaches have been utilizing since 2015, but now in the classroom. Available through a school-wide rollout or even a single teacher within a single classroom, whatever best suits your needs, take advantage of the Lead 'Em Up classroom and allow your students to experience the same power and growth that our student athletes have been experiencing for years. Take advantage of our Lead 'Em Up classroom. Make sure you bring this into your school. You don't want to go another school year without the Lead 'Em Up influence within your student body. You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A. Thank you for hanging with us. I am Adam, and today I'm joined alongside a good friend of mine, Chris Woodside, assistant coach at St. Joseph's College of Maine women's basketball. If you follow the Lead 'Em Up podcast, Chris has been on in the past, and he is helping kind of take part of this championship series because, coach, this year you had a really successful season, and you all made a run. First off, Chris, appreciate you joining today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really glad to be on and chat again.
Of course, man. Chris is one of my favorite leadership minds. We get a chance to spend time together usually in January up in Maine, but even throughout the whole year, we're always interacting and talking. And Chris is a leadership professor of sorts up there. Well, not even of sorts. You are a leadership professor. Have your doctorate, I believe,
yes,
correct?
Sir. Yes, yep, sir.
In leadership studies.
In leadership with a focus on sport. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. So, I mean, you're all in, but let's talk about this year. Obviously, this year was a really special one, and you all had a great run. And before we get into officially the full part of this season, you know, fill us in, Chris, on what last year looked like in the sense of, where'd you all go last year? What did that team lose? And what did you start this year with from a returning cast? Was it a young team, new team? So kind of take us through the end of last year into this year.
Yeah, we've been incredibly fortunate here at St. Joe's, really kind of go over the last decade. Our team has been in 9 of the 10 conference championships of our conference. And so last year was a super successful year. We were able to win our conference tournament last year in a game where we were behind the entire game. And our best player at the time, most outstanding player of the tournament, Hannah Talon, scored 18 points on 8-for-8 shooting in the fourth quarter to come through. And she outscored the other team by herself. So we were down 6. We ended up winning by 6. And really on the back of Hannah, and then able to go to the NCAA tournament where we lost to a very talented team. And so, you know, we were feeling pretty good coming into the year because, you know, if you look in the summer, we graduated 3 seniors. One was a starter, 2 were, I would say, you know, our 8th and 9th person, played, you know, valuable minutes, very strong people. But we had a really, really talented, I'm going to call her a first year player. She's a sophomore as a person because she was injured, but she was a super talented player that was going to be coming in. So we thought, you know, she's probably someone that will start right away. She's talented enough. And we had some other really good freshmen along with some incoming students that we thought were going to be, you know, really good pieces. So, you know, we put together a schedule based on knowing that Hannah was going to be back, Jelly was going to be back. I mean, our, you know, main core was going to be back of our top. So our top 5 scorers were all going to be back that, you know, we wanted a challenge. And then August came and Hannah tore her ACL. And so that's your most outstanding player. Our leading scorer, probably, you know, arguably probably one of our best defenders as well, gone. And we have to start the season now with a little uncertainty. Again, where we thought we had, there was a pretty good certainty, you know, one person who knew, you know, what her role was. And so it created a little bit of unknown, because now, you know, while we still have Nina and Jelly returning in the starting lineup as seniors, and Elizabeth as a rising sophomore who was the rookie of the year before, you know, feeling pretty good about her in that spot. Well, that now we have two open starting spots that are up for grabs. And so it, you know, there were some unknown to start the year. Again, when I thought in the summer and we put together our schedule for the year, you know, we were really hoping to try to make a type of run where you don't end up, you put yourself in a spot where you could get an at-large bid, not just have to win your conference because you play such tough opponents. Mm. You obviously have to win those games too. But we tried to put it together.
Is Hannah, is that news that she, is she out for the season when that happens?
Yeah, so that's her third time in her career that she's torn her ACL. And so she's now...
Same knee?
Same knee, all the same one.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, that was pretty, obviously tough from a basketball perspective, but tough emotionally because, and you've been around the team a lot, she's one of the best young ladies you'll ever be around, right? Really positive, happy, smiling, you know, can obviously a phenomenal player, but, you know, just as loud and enthusiastic on the sideline for her teammates. You know, obviously talk about Green with leading up, she's one of the definitions of Green, along with Haley, who I know, you know, was one of our Green 13 last year. So, you know, it was a tough loss, and it definitely impacted the start of the year because now everyone else has to pick up a new role because our leading scorer is gone and one of our best defenders is now gone. And who's going to take on that role?
Now, are you all sitting there when an injury hits like that, whatever you thought you all could do realistically, does that change? Do you begin changing conversations about expectations? Because in your head, you go from a great year last year. You think about the returners. You start envisioning like, oh, we can make a run this year. Oh, wow, we can make noise. Oh, man, you, I mean, you already said it. You lined up certain opponents. Now, all of a sudden, do you shift your expectation or do you still have this optimism that, like, we're still going to make it work and not miss a beat? Like, be real.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's an interesting way to look at. Obviously, in your initial moment, it's like, oh, shoot, what are we going to do? Right. And that's, I think any coach in any spot, you lose your best player statistically. Obviously, there's a lot of talented players on our team at that time. You know, what are you going to do? But I do believe, you know, we still thought that we're really, really good. Because I think as we show, we still have a lot of talent on the team. What happens now is your margin for error is a lot smaller. And now you're asking some younger players to really have to step in sooner and faster. And you're really hoping that your off-season development went really well. You know, Division III, unlike 1 and 2, is, I'm sure people know, you know, we don't have the ability to work with them outside of the season. So you'll give them stuff to work on, and it's totally up to the players. And so now, you know, when you get into September and the year starts, first October 15th is the first day of practices, you're just like, well, let's hope what we asked them to do, they did. And you're not quite sure how much better anyone got. So all you have is, you know, the prior year's knowledge to base it on. So yeah, there's some tenuous moment for sure of like, you know what, this is definitely going to be a lot more challenging. But I would say, again, probably because of Coach McDevitt and the history of excellence here, that you still expect to win. Like, we still expected that we're going to go try to compete and try to win this thing. And I don't know, you know, what it's going to look like, but we're going to figure that out.
So talk from a leadership standpoint, whether it's captains or whatever the approach is going into this season. You know, you mentioned, all right, so you've got statistically our best player, she's out, she was going to be a senior, right, Hannah?
Yep.
You've got two returners coming in, but you also have this young previous like freshman of the year, right, who's so like leadership, it's interesting. It sounds like you've got this mix of like young and old, but even some of the young could be even more talented than the old, or at least like right there. Are you a program that's done captains? Did you do captains? What is the conversation about who's going to lead us this year? Like, we need people to step up. What is that theme? What's that messaging that you all give out?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is an interesting, you know, I'll call it dichotomy, because we have, you know, the four seniors. I'm going to count Hannah in that group. And then we only have two juniors. And we have a group of five sophomores for this year's group, which is probably our largest group, and then four freshmen. So we're really more young than we are old. And then if you look at, you know, from a playing time perspective, you know, it's the seniors and then sophomores and freshmen that played the most, if you were to break it down. So we certainly played with a lot of younger players. We do captains. We have historically, it's something that people have to apply for, talk about what they want to go through. They go through an interview process with Coach McDevitt, myself, Coach McNamara, our other assistant coach. And, you know, they have to talk about a plan of what they, you know, plan to do as a leader, how they want to grow, how they think they can do it. And then, you know, we go from there. And I have nothing but great things to say about our four seniors, you know, Jelly, Haley, and Nina. They were captains as juniors, right? So they just carried over and were captains again as seniors. And I think that speaks to their leadership. Hannah joined them to be a captain here. I think whether they have a title or not, those four from the time they stepped on campus here have been leaders. I'm going to miss those four a lot. Obviously, as I'm graduating, because they've just been, you know, those people that talk on the floor, you know, try to come to you and ask for advice. They crave that development. And Hannah herself wants to be a sports performance coach, right? You know, sports psychologist, and looks to go through. So she has a ton of, you know, passion around the same sort of things that we're doing. So I think they did a great job, you know, doing that leadership. But one of the things we challenge everybody is, like, everybody has influence, right? Leadership is just influence to me. And you can choose how your influence is never neutral. It's either positive or it's negative. You know, it's a very common PGC thing that they talk about a lot. And I believe in that wholeheartedly, right? Your influence is never neutral. And so we definitely have those conversations about, you know, how are you going to develop? You know, as a team, we do biweekly leadership and team building culture sessions. So, you know, the athletes are involved in that. And in addition, as a school, we have the Monks Leadership Academy, where students can participate through all 4 years. And leadership development with other athletes. And so you may choose to be a part of that. Everyone's a part as a freshman, then you continue on. So we had, you know, all five of those sophomores had chosen to stay on. So they were also part of that leadership academy in addition to what we were doing as a team. And then our seniors were involved in leadership as well, as, you know, in their higher level. So, you know, I think they were getting a ton of that development and knowing that they needed to have a voice. But I will say, you know, one of the challenges this year, and you saw it yourself, was, you know, the group afraid to say the wrong thing, right? The quote unquote wrong thing. So they'd say nothing sometimes. It's like, look, please, we need you to talk. We need you to develop. And I would say that was one of our largest struggles all year with a young team, is getting them to feel confident in their voice and that they do have good things to say and they do know what's going on. And that, you know, you can be an introvert and a quiet person away from the court, but when it comes to being on here, we need you to communicate for us to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting when you do have that split of sorts between old and young, that sometimes the younger underclassmen, they really do struggle kind of speaking up, because there's just dynamics. Maybe there's some innate personality dynamics that just kind of cause them not to want to speak up, you know, just because, to your point, shy, quiet, introverted, reserved. But then also it's just this belief that I'm an underclassman. I want to kind of honor the seniors. And it really does create a dynamic there, and you have to work so hard. But I mean, these underclassmen, you think about the work that you all are doing and the leadership, the Monks Leadership Academy, like, that's a lot of leadership development. And I would have to imagine, like, all of that intentionality, when you think about the excellence, the standard of excellence that you all have, that's been there over the years, those two things go hand in hand, right? How have you been so successful? You can't ignore the intentional efforts of development that's happening every single month for all the athletes at a high level. And I've noticed that every time I've visited you guys, I mean, just everybody is so, they're elevated. I think that's just the word I just think about. Like, they're elevated. They're elevated in their maturity. They're elevated in their focus. They're elevated in their perspectives. And I celebrate you all, 'cause that doesn't just happen.
I appreciate that. And I think that's one of the things that we call those unseen hours. I know Alan Stein always talks about unseen hours.
Yeah.
But those are really important things that are going on. And I think from the outside, people see, you know, a program that's, you know, you just win, right? And we've been very successful, right? 9 out of the 10 years being in that championship game, winning 6, going to the NCAA tournament, 7 of the last 10. But it's not that easy. It doesn't just happen. And it is a testament to coach and who he recruits, obviously, and those players that come in. But I think also the players and their buy-in, I know especially over the past 4 years that I've been here, in developing off the court as well and the relationships. And I think, you know, a great example of the culture and how I, you know it is just real. Yesterday, Jelly was in a regional senior all-star game. She, you know, got voted in to go to the senior all-star game. I was going to go down and watch the game. 11 of our 15 players, so she'd be number 12, went to the game to support her. Our athletic trainer went to the game to support her. Our coaching staff was all there. And so there's, you know, 20 athletes playing in the senior all-star game. No other athlete had more than two of their teammates there supporting them. We had essentially our whole team.
That's crazy. And
not because it was required, not because they just, that's what they wanted to do. And I think that obviously speaks to Jelly's impact and influence on her teammates, but also what it means to be here. It's like, you know, one of our green standards that they came up with is supportive. Like, I can't find a better way to be supportive than, hey, we're going to be here, even though I know it's an all-star game and we're just going to have fun. Like, we want you to know that we're here. And she didn't know, so she was definitely surprised. And it was a fun moment.
That's incredible. Yeah, great testament to the culture there. All right, so let's jump into the season here. So you get going in the season, and y'all get off to a hot start. Are you still figuring it out as you have all these new pieces? What's the beginning of the season there looking like?
Yeah, it was challenging. As we said, we scheduled some tough competition. We wanted to face it. I think you know iron sharpens iron, and we had our opening weekend. We won that opening tournament, but at the midway point, with non-conference, we were 5-6 in our non-conference schedule. We were sitting at 6-6 going into January, and we had lost, four games where we were close in the fourth or ahead. We lost to Bowdoin, who finished in the Elite Eight this year, really, really good team. They won the NESCAC conference, and we were up by 14 at half, and we gave back that entire lead in the third quarter and then, lost in the fourth. So, we were struggling to find, that identity to finish a game and win when it's close. And I would even say a belief that we're supposed to win. It's funny. You think, hey, you've had all this success. You have some returners, but people were in different roles and, roles that maybe they weren't comfortable with or confident that they could do. And so that those self-doubts creep in. And, it was a struggle. I remember sitting with Coach McDevitt. We played a game right before Christmas break, before we went to California. And, another game, we had a halftime lead and we came out bad in the third, and that team, beat us. They went on to the NCAA tournament as well. So another good team. And he's like, geez, we're just not playing well. We're just not playing well. And so that was a tough moment. We went to California right before break, and I think that was a turning point. Even though we lost both games in California, in just the bonding that everyone did, and like understanding this is, now we're going to start conference play in January, and now hey, we are in this spot in non-conference, but the games that matter are conference play for us. To make sure that we secure our home court. And that was really a turning point in January. Also, I think, not coincidentally, you were able to come up in January as well. So another continued development, an outside person to talk about some stuff. And we really worked on some of that communication stuff, which I think was helpful. And that was really, I would say, our turning point. But halfway, it wasn't looking great. We weren't looking like a championship team, I would say, at that point.
You said something really interesting. I wrote it down. Roles change confidence. And you could take that's just a great reminder for us. You can look at an athlete and they've won and they've been successful and they played minutes on a previous team that experienced success. So we just assume that they should have the confidence. But now all of a sudden, when all the roles change and their role changes, I don't know if that confidence transfers or if it really is a starting fresh of sorts. And we have to think about that. We can't just assume that the person, because they had confidence before, like it's if that confidence is going to be there at the same level. That's really interesting when you talk about, that's one of those things that makes me want to like dig deeper you know, think about like the role confidence, how it changes when the role of the individual changes.
Yeah, I think it's huge as a role change. And I think in sports, especially where people put a premium on this idea of starting or a certain amount of minutes or shots. And if you're asking people to change their role from, hey, you know, we're not going to start you anymore, we're going to start somebody else. And sometimes that's not because somebody else is necessarily better than you, but it helps our team be better. You know, I think of the San Antonio Spurs, right, with Manu Ginobili coming off the bench. He was one of the five best players on the team. He finished late, but it was better for them to, you know, from a matchup to start the game for him to come off the bench. And we had to do that. We rotated the lineup a little bit early on. Ultimately, eight different people started. I think four spots were pretty much the same all season. But that fifth spot, we kind of played with some different people in that spot to try to find, like, what's going to be the thing that's going to help our team the most. And I know doing that was challenging for those in that position because, you know, there's just a mental side of I'm starting versus I'm coming off the bench. And then if I don't play well, there's pressure I put on myself. And I think, well, if I don't play well now, I'm no longer going to start. Maybe I'll come off the bench because I played bad. And as much as the decision never really was about that, I can understand how an athlete had to navigate that in their head of like, oh, if I don't play well, that means that's why I'm going to go on the bench. When sometimes it was just, hey, the other team has 2 6-footers and we want more size on the side or, you know, something of that nature. But that's easy as a coach to say. It's a lot harder for players who have, you know, high expectations for themselves.
Take me through a little bit more detail of your trip to California and how you think that was a turning point despite losing. Reason I'm asking you to go deeper is because on the surface, it's like, you know, we went out to California, just like our time together. We just came back and it really shifted. When you hear that initially, it's almost like what some magic trip, like went out, like you went out there and just magically you are no, like what happened out there? Right. Did you do an escape room? I mean, like, obviously I'm joking a little bit, but like what happened out there that you truly look at and say, okay, there were these moments that changed the course and trajectory or united us or aligned us. What happened?
Yeah. You know, I think some of it is how you play and starting to build that confidence and belief in yourself. So, you know, we played Whittier, who at the time was doing very well, was the only team at that time who had beaten Bowdoin in the country. At that time, and they are a really good defensive team. And, you know, they jumped all over us to start the game. And it was like, man, we are just playing awful. But we kept, you know, looking up and what felt like a 20 or 30 point game, you know, we're still within 10, it's still within 10, we're still in single digits. And, you know, we got it down in that fourth quarter, we got it down to 3. Ultimately, they win, but we played really good. We played really good defense and we rebounded. Something we hadn't done really well up to that point. I don't think, you know, I think, you know, we weren't playing the defense that we needed to, nor rebounding the way we needed to. And so we were able to kind of talk about that afterwards. Like, you see how close it is and you see how you can play terribly for 3 quarters. And really all it takes is 1 quarter of good offensive basketball for you to come back. So you just have to make sure that you don't allow that offensive end to hurt your defensive end. Because I think for a lot of our players, you know, the offensive end was hurting them on the other end. And because it was messing with their mind. You know, we had last year, we were one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the entire country statistically. We shot over 37% as a team. We started off this year under 22% through, you know, that early, you know, 12 game stretch. We just couldn't find it. We had 2 players that are lifetime, 1 senior who's a career 39% 3-point shooter. She was at 10%. And a freshman who the year before had been 39, she was down at 15%. So these two were just struggling to find that rhythm. Now, in practice, still doing really well. But, you know, you want to see that go in during the game. And so I think, you know, that was impacting how other things were going. And so I think that game was a great example of like, hey, we played terrible offense for 3 quarters and we still were right there because of our defense. So let's stop worrying so much about that offensive end and allow that. So I think that was one like key moment. He's like, oh, okay. Like it clicked. Like, yeah, we can hold the team. The final score was like 49-43, I think. So like we can play defense, get a good team. The next game was a completely opposite game, a team that pressed the entire game, which we hadn't seen yet at all. And in our head, we think, yeah, we've probably got a pretty good press break. We go down 24 to start the game. Blitzkrieg us. We're turning the ball over left and right. And it's like, man, this is not a good moment. Completely different type of style of game, speed of game. The turnovers out of control. We come back in that game, take the lead in the fourth quarter.
Take
the lead in the fourth quarter. Again, as I mentioned, we end up, you know, losing at the end. I think it ended up being like a three-point game that we lost. But it led to good conversations afterwards of like that confidence with the ball in pressure. So some of that turnover wasn't necessarily as much that they were doing, but what we were doing to ourselves and the fear that existed and that lack of belief in my ability to be able to make a move by this pressure or make a good pass. And so instead of me doing something, I'm trying to pass it to someone else. Coach always jokes about hot potato. No, you do something. No, you do it. And then we had really good stuff on film. It's like, look what happens when you just play confidently and you play downhill and you attack strong. And so I think, you know, those two games, even in losses, reminded us that we are capable of winning different styles of games, even though we didn't. And I think people make a big deal about winning and losing. The gap isn't that big. It really isn't in every level. It's a couple possessions here and there that can be the difference between you winning and losing. And so, you know, sometimes people let the outcome impact how they feel about where they're at versus the process. I know, you know, I always talk about, you know, the process and trust in it. I want to see that we're getting better in those areas and talk about that often. And then we know, you know, we're getting there. And I think you could see our defense was starting to get better. Our rebounding was starting to get better. And, you know, now we need to have just a little bit of confidence. We can put this together and we will be successful if we continue down that track. Was the message that we were sharing as a coaching staff, at least.
I mean, it is character and culture that can allow two losses to be turned into success. I mean, that's the bottom line, right? You know, to even be able to like, I'm thinking about what is the, like the psychology that could allow that. And I go back to the character and culture that your players had the character to be able to take the defeat, find the good, be growth oriented enough to be coachable enough to be able to kind of see the vision and see how, yes, we were close. Yes, we can compete. And to be able to have that environment, just that overall team environment to take two losses on the road, right? You could say that's detrimental for some program to fly from Maine to California, right? Cross country trip that ends up in two losses with a long cross country flight back, right? You hear it all the time. Teams that struggle, it's like, yeah, on that flight home, you know, you just could tell it was just, yeah, we were done. You know, like, but like when you've got the right character and culture, you can, once again, allow for an opportunity to take two losses and turn them into victories. That's fantastic, Chris. You know, they always say you want to be at your best when it matters most. Were you all then trending going into postseason play in a space where you're saying, man, we are rolling? Was it that good? Was it that clean as you were finishing the regular season into the playoffs?
Yeah, I think we started really, you know, stacking together some successful games in a row, you know, through January and February. That's all of our conference play. We played one non-conference game during that. We played Bates, another team that made the Sweet 16 during that. And they really, they put the hammer down on us and beat us pretty good in the second half, which was probably at that time. Again, you know, it's funny. I think losses can be good as long as you have the right, you know, mindset about it. I think it was another game where we allowed that doubt to creep in our minds and impacted how we played down the stretch. So it's good to revisit, like, you know, not doubting yourself, no matter the talent of your opponent. You can respect your opponent. They shouldn't fear. And you know, they're a really good opponent. There's a reason they, you know, went so far as they did. But, you know, we can continue to play with them. But one of the things I think as a group we continue to do really well is focus on our conference and really trying to lock down that home court advantage. Because for our league, the games are all played at the higher seed. So if we finish, you know, first, we're able to go through. And so, you know, for us, the top other teams were St. Joe's of Connecticut, Albertus Magnus, and Emmanuel. And I think coming into the season, everyone knew those were probably the top four other teams. And then there's, you know, a next tier after that. We beat Albertus by 3 in a game that was close all the way through. That was, you know, really big in ensuring that, you know, we had to play them. We went through. We played Emmanuel really well. That's the team that prior to this year we had seen in the finals 7 times of the 9. So, you know, another, you know, rival that's really good. And then we were able to beat St. Joe. So, you know, we secured that home court and you know, celebrated that. You know, we went 14-0 in conference play. Only, you know, the net only team.
Hold on. You're essentially 500, 6-6 roughly going into conference play. I think you had one conference opponent during the 6-6.
Yeah.
Like early part, which you had won. And then you end up going undefeated in the conference.
Yeah. We were really, really fortunate. I think, you know, we were able to make some adjustments. I think people started feeling comfortable in their role. The combination of Jelly and Grace, who ended up being the newcomer of the year, the freshman of the year. And then she's a sophomore, but she spent the whole prior year out due to injury. So she hadn't played basketball in an entire year. So you think, you know, she had to build in confidence of like, you know, again, super talented player, D3 hoops, Region 1 player, rookie of the year. She's obviously a very good player. But that's still making an adjustment when you're coming back from an injury and you haven't played together. So I think she started feeling really comfortable in what her role and then the rest of everybody kind of fed off those two. Those were our top two scorers. And I think everyone else started to fill in their role from there.
Hey, this is Kayla from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's Leadership Nugget. One of the biggest mistakes that you can make in your leadership journey is assuming that your talent will get you places. And we have a phrase that hangs in the restaurant that says, be the hardest worker in the room because opportunity comes to those who bring more than just talent to the table. So sure, you might bread a chicken sandwich the fastest or your milkshakes might be perfectly portioned each and every time, but leadership is more than these things and we're not going to promote someone based on talent alone. It's about the people that embody the values of hustle and dedication, the ones that show up early and stay late, they volunteer for that special project, they engage in feedback conversations, and they always position themselves as a humble student of the business. Those that stand out to me are the ones that choose to be the hardest worker in the room, not necessarily the one that has the most talent. Now let's jump back into the episode.
So, Chris, you said you were working on kind of two things, fueling the confidence or building the confidence, and then also working to try to get home court advantage. Let me ask you, how do you work on confidence? You know, from a chicken and egg scenario, you have to win to be confident, or does the confidence produce the win? So someone could say, yeah, of course you're getting confident. You went undefeated in the conference, right? You went 14-0, of course. But you were also saying you were building that confidence. Do they have to work off each other? Does one fuel the other more? What's your general take on that?
I mean, I would be a fool to say outcomes don't impact confidence. Outcomes definitely impact them. But I don't think outcomes alone would impact them, because if so, our confidence would wax and wane, because statistically we're going to have stretches where we don't make shots or we don't, you know, you're going to lose some games. And so it can't be the only thing, but it definitely makes you feel better. Right. I think some of the stuff that we did is, you know, we'll track shooting in practice and we track the shooting they do individually. And so when someone, you know, might be feeling like they're not doing well, I mentioned before, you know, having two players who had been really good shooters and they were at like that 10-15%. And I wish that was an exaggeration. It really was. And that, you know, under 15% at the halfway point, I pulled up their shooting numbers from practice. And I said, look, I know what you're seeing in the game right now, but here's what you do every day. And so you've earned the right. I think Clay Thompson once said that, like, I work too hard to not be confident right now. And I was like, you are working too hard right now to not believe in yourself. So the next open one, you've got to keep taking it because it's going to happen. You're just not getting the volume in a normal game to be able to tell. So if I'm only getting three shots in a game, man, that's just in statistics, it could happen. I might miss three in a row. You miss three in a row in practice all the time, but you take another 50, so you don't feel bad about it. So you just need to trust that it's going to be over volume. You'll go through it. Both of them ended up right near 30%, which is huge if you think about starting at 15 by the end of the season for both of them to get back up by the end of the season at 30%. One hit two of the biggest shots in our semifinal game. She had 8 points down the stretch against Emmanuel to help us win. So it's like, if you keep trusting yourself, you're going to get there. So I think those other things that you can show from practice, that you can show in film that you're doing really well, that you can show statistically, you know, things like rebounding numbers. What are we doing statistically in that area? And are we improving in our rebounding percentages? Not just like, do we have more rebounds than the team? Because that's based on how many shots there are, but percentage-wise, available rebounds, how many we're getting, and are we getting better? So I think showing those other things helps as well. And then, man, I have a group message with the girls. I try to send, I call it Woodside's Words of Wisdom every Wednesday. And I'll send out just some positive things to be thinking about, some mental performance stuff. We do some of visualization and those things. We spend time talking about, you know, the value that our teammates have that is far bigger than the game. So I think all that other work as well helps you realize that, you know, your value isn't just on whether you made or missed a shot. You have such a bigger value to our team, and that hopefully that helps feed your confidence in that, you know, we want you to take the good shot, whether it goes in or not. And we'll talk about that too. That's probably the last thing in practice every day. A good shot's a good shot, whether it goes in or not. And a bad shot's a bad shot, whether it goes in or not. Mm. And so we celebrate good shots, and probably you'll see me look like a fool sometimes. You know, I stand up when we take good shots all the time. I'm cheering and we're missing shots and I'm up there, great shot, great shot. You know, over exuberant about it because I want them to know I don't care about the outcome. I really care that we're doing the right thing.
I mean, that is a natural branding segment for you. Woodside's Wednesday Words of Wisdom. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, it doesn't get more cleaner from a branding standpoint than that, Chris.
Yeah. Great alliteration. I'd be great in a game of categories.
Seriously. My gosh. Hey, as you were headed in to the playoffs there, you're going through your stretch. Is everything kumbaya with the culture during all of this? Are you having setbacks? Are there individuals creating distractions, disruptions? Obviously, don't get into specifics, but are you dealing with any of that as things are going, or are things just clicking?
I would say on the outside, from what I see, not. As we all know, as coaches, we don't get to see them 24/7. I have the unique part where I teach at school too here. So I do see them a little more than Coach McDevitt, and I have some of them in classes. So I do see them elsewhere, but I don't see them all the time. But I do think legitimately, you know, from a culture standpoint, there's none of that jealousy or frustration with somebody else or backfighting. There's none that I saw. And I don't want it to come across as, you know, Pollyanna, but I really, you know, don't think that that's something that we've had to deal with this year, which was nice. You know, I think having those conversations often about roles, having those conversations often about, you know, supporting each other and lifeguarding each other. And we had some great conversations around what it can feel like and look like when you're not getting what you want. So we all have great goals. And I want everyone on our team, their goal to be to play. Like, if you're not a competitor, you probably don't want to be in college basketball. You're not going to help us win. And so we want everyone to want that. And at the same time, while you want that, putting aside your want to know that the coaches have to make a decision about who's playing. And so it's not your teammates' fault, not something you should be angry at them for getting that opportunity. You should celebrate them for their opportunity and not be jealous. And so we spend time talking about that ahead of time and talking about those red feelings that you'll have in that moment when you're not getting what you want. Just that natural, like, man, you know, so-and-so went in and, you know, I'm the 10th person, they're the 9th person, we're really close, we battle every day. I think I could do better than that person. And that's kind of a red thought at moment. It's a natural thought. I think people have that moment. It's hard not to. But instead of like, I could do better, I say, how can I make them feel better about their moment? Because coach mm-hmm. trusted them, they put them out. I agree that I want to be a great teammate. I want them to feel better. I'm still going to be upset about my moment, and I'm still going to work to improve myself. But I can't change here. And the only thing that can happen if I'm negative is it actually hurts me in the long run. Yeah. It hurts our team. So I think the student athletes did a great job with that. The ladies were super supportive of each other while still having those moments where they came and saw myself or Kelsey or coach to talk about, like, what do I need to do to improve? What do I need to do to get in? And I'm sure some of them would have loved to have played more, or got more opportunities. But I do have to give hats off to how well they acted as a team and really did support each other. So I think from that side, we were very fortunate. Sickness and health was an issue, though. So we were certainly worried about sickness and health.
I mean, because y'all live in coldest part of the country, you could argue, man, up there in Maine. Everyone's probably got a cold or a flu or something.
It seems like it. It seems like trying to stay healthy all season. Any coach will tell you, man, that's probably one of the biggest challenges. You need a little bit of luck to win a championship. You know, this championship series, yeah, there's a lot of work that goes in, but you also need a little bit of luck too.
Yeah. Reminds me of that James Clear story of the Great Britain or the British Tour de France team, where the coach, I don't know if you recall that story, where he examined everything in the program to try to improve every aspect by 1%. And he declared in the initial press conference that they would win the Tour de France in 5 years. They end up winning in two. But part of his 1% of every area was literally looking at all the things that cause sickness. Mm. And like, he changed the soap that the cyclists would wash their hands with to be more of a antibacterial disinfectant type soap, changed the air purification in their rooms. Cause he said every sickness was a 3-day setback, because you begin to feel sick and your practice performance on the day you begin to feel sick is lessened. You then miss the next day. And then when you come back the third day, you're recovering. So it's almost a 3-day setback. So anyways, sidebar. All right. As we begin to wrap up, take us through this postseason run though, Chris, because you guys were hot going in and it carried.
Yeah. Hot going in. Our first opponent, Riv. It seems like we were fated to play each other. This is the third straight year that we've played Riv in the playoffs in that first matchup. And for that group, they had a lot of seniors as well. One of the super talented young ladies, Lyric Grumblad, who is one of the top five scorers in the nation and has been for three straight years. They were ready to play. They came to play. It's interesting. We've been pretty successful against them over the past 3 years and having, won by pretty significant margins, and they were not going to allow that to happen. And so I thought they played one of the toughest, it was probably one of the toughest matchups you could have in a 1-8 matchup, just by, some tiebreakers that ended up putting them in 8 instead of in 6. It was a really tough matchup. And so, we were able to overcome that and win. And then we face Emmanuel, who had been that team that we always face in the championship game. There's a lot of history there. They're a super successful program. And they have a lot of pride. And we jump out, huge lead, start to creep back, and they take the lead in the fourth quarter. And it's like, oh, wow. what are we going to do? And then, as I mentioned, Haley comes in. She was one of the ones that was struggling to shoot our green 13 and has just a phenomenal stretch at the last minute. Because we're, with a minute to go, we're down 3. She has the 3 to tie it. She has the 3 to give us the lead. And she had 2 free throws to help, cinch the deal. Mm. And so I think everyone was super excited. But as a coach, seeing her navigate the season of, like, things just not going the way that she wanted it to go, not because of the work, but just, man, that's sometimes how it goes. It just doesn't go. And to see her have that success, that was probably one of the highlights of the season. Like, even now I get a little tear thinking because it's just such a cool moment to see her have that. And we don't win without that in that moment.
Mm-hmm. And she gets to hold on to that understanding for life.
Yes. Yeah. I was having a talk with our men's basketball coach. He was saying, that's a really cool moment because that's someone where, let's say we don't win that game, she may go off thinking like her career, wasn't really what it was. And it was. I have so much respect for Haley as a green, teammate and everything she does as a leader. And the work that she puts in, you know, she deserves a good thing to have. I'm glad that happened because it hopefully it'll be something that she'll remember and shine going forward. You want people that work hard and support their teammates to succeed. So you're really excited, you know, that happened. And then, you know, 2 days later, we play the other St. Joe's in a championship game. And it's a battle back and forth. You know, it was 20 to 21 at the end of one quarter. You know, I think it was a 3-point game at half. And then finally, you know, in that third quarter, we really were able to pull away, which is a cool full circle moment. Because as I mentioned before, some of these other games, the third quarter is when we fell apart. If you look at earlier in the season, when things weren't going well, you know, we were coming out in that. And I think you tie back in, we knew how important throughout the year, we knew how important it was to bring high energy to start that third quarter because of our failures earlier and not showing up in that way to start the third quarter. And we had a great, I mean, we talk about that 14-0 again, that's the home. The fans bring so much energy and so much, you know, enthusiasm. I think fans help with your confidence as a player as well, because they're there to pick you up whether something goes right or not. So they give you that little boost. So we talk about role boosting your confidence, success boosting. You know what? Fans can boost your confidence too. And I think that was a huge pull. So, you know, we were able to win that one actually pretty easily by the final score. It wasn't easy by any means, but the final score was, I think, by 12. And so, you know, which led to us going to the NCAA tournament. And I thought, you know, what I loved is every single person believed that we had an opportunity to win. You know, the year before we went to Scranton, who at the time was 27-0 and ranked number 3 in the nation. This year we went to Rhode Island College, who was 27-0 and ranked number 3 in the nation. So same situation. I thought when we went to Scranton the year before, I don't know that we believed with 100% that we were going to win that we had an opportunity to win, that we weren't going to win. We had an opportunity. I said, man, I love our attitude right now, because we went into Rhode Island College believing that we had an opportunity. Not that it was going to be easy, that we could, but we believed. We didn't succeed at the end of the day. It's another game. We got down 20. We were able to come all the way back and get it to within 3 again in that third quarter. So showed, you know, that growth and that belief. And it was a really successful season, man. It was really fun. It was really fun.
Man, you all continue to do a great job. And I always say one hallmark of great coaching is when you can get the most out of what you have. And from my perspective, that's what it seems like is what you find year after year with your program, is that you and the rest of the coaches, you all are doing all the right things to get the most out of what you have. Right? May not be the biggest, may not be the strongest, may not be the fastest, may not be the most talented, you know, D3 team in the country, but like you all are maximizing the potential of each of the players. And that from a leadership side, from the coaching program, but then the character side of the players doing what they need to do to get the most out of themselves and putting the two together. And that's why you have historic success. So coach, I appreciate you sharing, you know, just once again, the hope of the championship series is really to kind of go through the journey. And really kind of go through the journey of the season to kind of hear the ups, the downs, the good, the bad, the ebbs, the flows that every season always creates. And that's what is so fun when you get to the beginning of every season, is because, hey, we're about to enter into a new journey this year, new personality. We don't know what it's going to look like, but let's go. Right. So, Chris, appreciate you sharing. Appreciate you giving us some insight. And as always, appreciate your leadership mindset and just how you go about life in general. So, Chris, appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks again. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, listen, make sure you check out the remaining part of the championship series as we are sitting down with a handful of coaches that have engaged in the Lead 'Em Up program, that are users of the Lead 'Em Up program, that all went on championship runs this past winter season. We've got a collection of coaches that we will be going through the journey. And when you sit down for these episodes, lean into the things that are being shared and try to find as many nuggets as possible that you can then kind of take back or maybe shift your mindset and perspective as you continue the pursuit of growing as a coach. On behalf of Kyle, who's not with us today, but an entire Lead 'Em Up team, I am Adam. Until next time, coaches, have fun and lead 'em up.